Hello, friends. Welcome to another program of Two Guys with Heart, with Giff Briner and Dave Colonen. These two fine Christian gentlemen will do their very best to bring encouragement to your faith. We all undergo difficulties throughout our lifetime. How do we respond, and what is the correct direction that we should take? Giff and Dave will give it their best shot to guide our lives through the work and words of Jesus. And now, here they are, Two Guys with Heart.
Hey, good afternoon, friends. It's Giff Briner here, another program of Two Guys with Heart. We have a fascinating program for our listeners today. Me and my good friend,
Dave Colonen.
Dave, it sure is good to see you, my friend. I think our listeners are getting to know your voice because you're on rather frequently on WPFG. So your words are echoes that they like to hear. And today we're going to talk about a subject they like to hear. Of course, self-control, discipline. You know, Jesus never allowed what others said about him change his opinion of himself. He was able to stay in an even flow. And that's what we want to talk about today, to have our listeners try to follow in that footsteps. You know, nobody really knows you. Dave, who's the greatest person you ever met in your life? I know who the greatest person is that you ever met.
Jesus. You're talking about that, or are you talking about
I'm talking about
humans.
A person that you shook hands with or you touched or you know or you have met. Who was the greatest person that you have ever met?
Well, that's a big question.
Well, I know the answer. I know the answer for me. I know the answer for you. I know the answer for our engineer.
Okay. Let me hear it.
The answer for you is Dave Colonen.
What?
You are the greatest person that you have ever met. You have done things that only you know and you will understand, that only you can appreciate, that nobody else could fully grasp that.
That's a different conversation.
It is, but it's a fact of life. You're the only person that's been with you every second since the day you were born.
What an amazing
you
statement.
Know you. Yes, it is. Well, Jesus falls into that same kind of an umbrella in his life that he demonstrated. Remember, he was 30 years old before he became ready, as he said. He wasn't ready yet. Well, I think that's a fascinating thing to study. Consider for a moment, almost everyone in your life is more preoccupied with themselves than they are with you. Therefore, you know more about yourself than anyone else who will ever meet you. You don't ever forget that. It is not what men say about you that really matters in this good old life. It is what you believe about yourself. Jesus was slandered. He was falsely accused. They said he was possessed with devils. Countless accusations were hurled like stones against Jesus every day of his life. But it never affected him. He knew that he was he was all about. He knew, and he believed in himself. He believed in himself. He believed in his product. He knew that every accusers were ignorant, they were unlearned, and they were arrogant people. He knew that they simply feared him. People will always fight what they do not understand. The mind will always resent what it cannot master. Wars are fought because of ignorance and fear. Throughout human history, champions have had their names soiled and stained. Accusations and the slanderous lies have come against great political leaders as well as ministers. This is life. Daniel was accused of raping his employer's wife. Remember that? Paul was accused of arousing mobs through hatred and division concerning their belief systems and religious people. Jesus never begged anyone to believe him. He knew that integrity could not be proven, it must be discerned. He never wasted time with critics. He kept his attention on his goals. He stayed focused. They accused Jesus of being filled with devils. He paid no attention. He simply continued to cast out devils. That's written in Matthew chapter 12, Verse 24, Jesus never strived to look good. He simply was good. He did not labor to appear truthful because he was truthful. He never struggled to have a good reputation because he had good character. Every successful person wants to be loved. They want to be admired. But your enemies and critics will never leave your reputation unstained and untarnished. You must raise above that fact. You must never allow what other people say about you to change your personal opinion of yourself. Never. I remember listening to a lady's program. Her name was Rita Davenport many, 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 many years ago. I don't know if you know that name or not. But she used to say, I wish people wouldn't tell me what they think of me because your opinion of me is none of my business. That was her famous line. In other words, she didn't want to be discouraged. If you want to encourage her and say good, positive things, that's great because that would help build her momentum, build her self-esteem, build her character. And all these things are positives, and that's a good thing. But don't tear people down. Don't say negative, nasty things. Don't belittle them. And for goodness sakes, always tell the truth. Don't ever fabricate a story that would belittle somebody. David, I would imagine in the nature of your business, not only in the music profession, but in your years behind the pulpit as a pastor in Davenport, Iowa, you've had many opportunities, as well as serving in Barbados for all those years, to have these negative aspirations around you, negative people who's telling you this won't work or we can't afford that. And how did you handle those things?
Well, you know, I became what they call the legacy pastor. I don't know what it means. And when I ask them, they don't either. Uh-huh. You're old, Dave. You have more to say than most of us because you've been a lot of places.
Yeah.
I remember in our church where we had young people wanting to become preachers. The pastor got up one Sunday and he said, every young person that wants to be in the ministry, you want to someday pastor your own church. I want you to come to a meeting on Thursday night, and every month we're gonna teach you how to be a pastor and a preacher. Well, when I went to the first meeting just to see what in the world was who in our church, what, come on.
Yeah.
And 15 young guys were there.
Wow.
It took us aback, you know. And finally I said to some of the guys to just fit in where I could. I said, look, I'm going to pick about four of you, and I want you to come to my house once a month, and I want you to preach. All four of you preach in my basement to me, and I want to critique you. I want to tell you what you did wrong and what you did right. And if you can handle that, you're a part.
Yep.
Well, four guys raised their hands right away. Yeah, I'm coming. I'm coming. I'd love to. Well, that was fun. One of the problems with mankind that starts in the pulpit is the word Every time you don't know what to say and your mind doesn't work fast enough, you say If your preacher says 50 times during his message, you're going to be upset. You're going to say, what in the world is he doing? Why does he have to say One guy came and spoke in our church on a youth night, and I went to hear him preach. And he started from the first sentence, and I said, I better count this. I better count how many times. And at the end, he had said 98 times.
Yeah, in one sermon.
Yeah, so he stands behind his table trying to sell a CD or a picture or a book or something, and I went up to him, and he was really cocky about it all. Look how good I am. I did it, didn't I? And I said, hey, can I just say a couple words to you? Yeah. What do you want to say? I said, I counted your problem tonight as you spoke. I counted them. You said 98 times. Oh, no. Never. What are you talking about? He went and bought the tape of his message and took it home. And next time I saw him on Sunday, he said, Dave, I'm embarrassed. Yeah. He said, I could not believe that I said that 98 times. He said, I'm floored.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm so embarrassed now, and I want to hug you and thank you because you've helped me.
Yeah.
Well, that's been over a year. He's been around the world. And he says, I am a better preacher than I've ever been. Because if you hadn't told me that, I'd still be saying 98 times.
Yes. Sure. That's right.
Well, I have become the pastor of our church. People get up to make announcements, and if they say everybody looks my way, and I'm saying, don't look at me.
Don't look at me. I didn't say it.
So everybody tells each other.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody goes, you're going to talk on the platform, you better not say if David's in the audience.
Yeah. Yes.
So if you come to our church and you preach,
I will not say All right. Yeah. Isn't it funny how those kind of things really jump out at you? I know I was a hunter education instructor for 42 years for the Pennsylvania Game Commission. And if there's one thing that always bothered me, it was listening to people speaking about their firearms and using the word weapon. I said, well, wait a minute. You know, these are firearms or sporting arms. They are not weapons. And people would insist that the word weapon was okay. And boy, that really bothered me. When every time I did a critique, I used to go to Harrisburg and help train the new conservation officers to come in place. And, of course, they had to do a hunter education class. If they used the word weapon, oh, my. They would all look at me and say, he said it, Giff, he said it.
The best way to...
I know what you're saying.
I conquered the best way to help them. I said, look, the next time you speak, give announcements or anything, anytime you get on the platform and speak, I'm going to charge you $5 for every
That'll take it out of him pretty
quick. I'm going to get rich.
That would take it out of him. Yeah. Probably hasn't said it since. So you're right, though. Those things that can be repeated, we hear people say, when you get people that aren't familiar with their material, they'll hesitate a lot and do that one. And those things are very, very annoying. So you are correct in pointing those shortcomings out. Let's move on, Dave. I don't want to sound like we're beating up that subject too bad.
Well, we beat it up pretty bad.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did.
I'm sorry.
But that's okay. That's okay. It's we call this two guys with heart. So we have to demonstrate our heart and our personal experiences and our knowledge and how it impacts our Christianity. And the people, our listeners, like to know that you and I are just as human as they are. We don't come off like we're better than anybody else just because... we're in the ministry of the radio. Jesus understood timing and preparation. That's a little subject that I wanted to talk about. Let's take a minute to talk about that. Champions never, never hurry. The quality of preparation determines the quality of your performance. Athletes can tell you that from way back. A great concert pianist invests hundreds of hours in practice before the concert. He knows that the quality of those many grueling hours of practice will prepare him for one of the greatest performances that he's had. The world champion heavyweight boxer knows that he cannot wait to get into the ring with his opponent to prepare. It would be too late. So for many weeks before the great fight, he toils with the morning workout, the running, and the exercise program. Champions do not become champions in the ring. They are merely recognized in the ring. Their becoming happens in their daily routine. Jesus never hurried. Jesus did not begin his early ministry until he was 30 years old. His ministry was a short 3.5 years. His preparation time was 30 years. Jesus was very sensitive about his timing. When his mother told him that people had run out of wine at the marriage of Cana, he replied, "Woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not come yet." You see, Jesus never hurried. He could have done things like that, but he didn't. He waited until he was ready. Several years ago, a friend of mine had just entered the Amway business. He was so excited about this remarkable potential of becoming a diamond. However, he did not want to spend the time in learning how to present a plan to others. He felt it was just too much detail. He learned how to draw the circles, and as I watched him stumble over and over in his conversations with others, I finally said to him, "Hey, I learned the business. Study the products. Take time to learn how to draw these circles. If you will take the time to prepare your presentations, you will have believability. And the people will have confidence in you, and they will become a part of your business. You may not learn to draw circles the first night you hear about it, but don't worry, so set aside some hours each week to begin to prepare your presentation. Preparation is what I'm trying to say. Preparation time is never wasted time. It will take time to know your business. It will take time to know your product. It will take time to develop a list of customers and clients. But think about the life of Jesus. He saw hundreds die around him because of sickness and disease. But his time had not come. He saw thousands warped with the traditions and legalism of religious systems. But he knew that his Father was growing him up. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor of God's man. Luke chapter 2, verse 52. Jesus was willing to wait. He prepared himself. David, that's one I'd like to throw you one of those. Preparation time is extremely important. It was important with Jesus. It's important in us in our day-to-day lives. Whatever your work might be, prepare for it. Try to get better at it. I think we should all strive to be one of the best at what we do. Do you have any words of encouragement for our listeners that fall under this umbrella?
Well, being a singer, you have to prepare. If you want to be good, there's going to be nights when it's going to be a golden opportunity for you. You're going to be singing with the five best groups in America. You're going to have a big crowd of a couple thousand people, and it's going to be your turn, and you're going to have your 18 minutes. You don't say, hey, Lord, help me, please. We're going out there to do this job. You better do more than that.
That's right.
You better get on your knees and say, Lord, this is what you want me to do for you, and I want to do it as good as I can, and I can't do it without your help.
Right.
We would never walk out of the program thinking that we were hot shots. We were always interested in seeing that we could be good, that we could do it right together. I mean, sometimes the goosebumps would come up when you hear that sound just click.
Yeah.
And the next verse, of course, you're singing, it just rolls out of you, and it's all in sync. Everybody says the same word
just right.
Together at the same time. I mean, Neil was a part of our team, and the first thing we did when we learned a song was learn how to pronounce every word.
Every word.
We would talk this way and say every word and pronounce it. And then we learned to do it with two. And then we learned to do it with three. And then we learned to do it in front of people. And then we did it in front of the crowd, a couple thousand people.
That's wonderful.
When you walk up and you can start a song and sing it with precision.
Yeah.
You can do it where everybody knows exactly how to sing together.
Yeah.
One of the big groups today, the biggest group that I know today that is excellent at this is the Isaacs. You ever heard of them? They're a trio, two girls and a guy. They can sing without accompaniment, no orchestra, a cappella.
That's hard.
And I mean, they can sing with precision, whether it's slow or whether it's fast, and they know how to do it together slow and to build the fast.
Yeah.
And you know, when they're done, you are so enthralled with what they've done that you can't help yourself. You're overwhelmed with, wow, that was so incredible. No wonder everybody likes you. No wonder everybody wants to buy your tapes. No wonder you're at the top of the list. No wonder you're on the radio. Every time I turn the radio on, it's the Isaacs. Here comes the Isaacs. When they're in town, everybody comes to hear them sing. Why? Because they are precision singers.
They have practiced over and over and over. Do they have it down to?
You betcha.
Yeah.
Pays dividends.
Yep. You got to practice. You have to rehearse. You have to be well prepared. And I like your thought process. You said the first thing you do is pronounce every word properly. I think that's important because sometimes when I'm picking up a sing, if I'm in church and I'm singing a hymn and the pastor will select a hymn that I've never sang before, or at least I don't remember singing it before, And I'm trying to read down through there. Every now and then I'll stumble on a word as it's, you know, I mispronounced it or something, or I didn't read it right, or I'm trying to watch the music and I missed a letter or something like that. Well, that's kind of embarrassing. Did that never happen to you?
When you're in a group of three and you stick out with your mistake.
Yeah. Yeah, you we really would, yes.
Then the next day, you know, the knee was going to be on you like a 10-ton truck. Do it or we're going to stay here forever, right?
Keep doing it till you get it right.
Yeah, that's right.
I admire that. And that's very professional. We all should have that kind of work ethic and character. Do it right.
I love to turn on the radio and listen to all the groups. You can put 25 groups, and a lot of them mumble under their beard, if I can use that expression.
Uh-huh.
They'll say a sentence, and you will not know two words out of the sentence that they said. They've been mumbling. Right now, I can tell you, I can listen to 25 groups, and then you put on a Courier tape.
And you'll know the difference.
You will know it. You will say, wow, I understand every word.
Yeah.
Every word comes out of their mouth, and it's all together. Nobody is off. Yeah. It's on pitch. It's precision. It's right. That's why we're still here.
Yeah, that's right. 58 years later, you're still doing it.
That's what three guys stay together from 1955 to...
Yeah. Well, that's that burning desire for excellence. And that's what it takes. Jesus demonstrated that kind of burning desire, too. He had the passion about his work, the same as you do. I can just hear it in your voice. Passion is power. You will never have a significant success without anything until it becomes an obsession with you. An obsession is when something consumes you, your thoughts and your time. And that's exactly what you were talking about, Dave. You will only be remembered in life for your obsessions. Henry Ford will be remembered for the automobile, Thomas Edison, all of his inventions, Billy Graham, a great evangelist, Oral Roberts for his healing, the Wright brothers for the airplane. You see, it's the obsession that these people had is what they're remembered for. Jesus had a passion for his mission and his goal in life. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. Luke chapter 19, verse 10. How God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Ghost and with the power, who went about doing good and healing all that were oppressed of the devil, for God was with him. Acts 10, verse 38. You see, Jesus focused on doing the exact instructions of his Heavenly Father. He healed the sick. He noticed the lonely. He made people become successful. He restored their health. He repaired their life to a full fellowship with the Heavenly Father. One thing after another. You see, that obsession took him to the cross. It took him to the crucifixion. 8 inches of thorns were crushed into his brow. A spear punctured his sides. Spikes were driven into his hands. 39 stripes of a whip tore his back to shreds. 400 soldiers spit on his body. His beard was ripped off his face. But he was obsessed with the salvation of mankind, and he succeeded. You may start small. You may start with very little. But if you really love what you're doing, it'll consume your mind, your thoughts, your conversations, your schedule. You'll look at and you'll find extraordinary success. Do you dread going to work every morning? Do you anxiously look at the clock towards closing time? Do you think about what else you're going to do and daydream during the day when you're working? Would you wish you were doing something else? All of these things are sensitive to your accomplishment. Then you will probably not have much success if that's what you're doing. Find something that consumes you, something that is worthy of building your entire life around. Consider it. Jesus did. He was concerned about doing a quality job. And like Dave was saying about his musical business, he was concerned about a quality product. And that's what it takes. It takes everybody willing to do their very, very best and getting it right. David, we've exhausted our time. Do you have a closing thought you'd like to share with the listeners as we say goodbye for this week?
You can lose all of that by just forgetting it. I've been retired. We're in our fourth year of retirement. When we go to sing now, you know what? After 4 years, we can't do that precision together.
Is that right?
It's gone. You lose it.
Yeah.
And so we have to go to the practice room every day for a week before we go to sing anywhere.
Yeah.
Just to get close.
Yeah.
It takes time to be what you want to be. Don't forget that. It will take days and years to get you where you want to be. But then you'll have the rest of your life to enjoy it. Hallelujah.
That's wonderful.
What a way to go.
Great outlook. Thank you, my friend. Bye-bye for now. Gift Runner saying, look for you next week.
See ya. Bye-bye.